Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Paula Petrella. She's a writer and now a grad student at Cornell. And we're going to be talking about her very unique father, writer and independent filmmaker, Peter Savage. Paula, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be with you.
We should tell the story. You can tell the story. How did we get in touch?
Oh, yeah. This was through the wonderful author, Christina Rice, whose new biography on Jane Russell just came out. She had contacted me. She, through her research, had found out about Cauliflower Cupid, the film my father wrote and produced and acted in with Jane Russell in the 60s, and she asked if I could contribute anything to her book. I gave her some background on the film. I sent her some stills, set photography kind of stills from the film, and she used one in the book. And because she had interviewed with you, she connected you and me, and here we are.
I was totally fascinated by the idea of Cauliflower Cupids. First of all, the title alone is worth the price of admission sort of thing. And as a cinephile, I'd never heard of the movie before.
I'm not surprised.
Well, it's a pretty unique movie, and we'll talk about it in a bit. And it is, I think it's Jane Russell's last film, isn't it?
I think it is. It could be.
And I knew nothing about your father. And the more that I've learned about him, what a unique person. Now, you're hoping to get a biography of him published that's going to be called what? Roll with the Punches.
Yeah, tentatively, yeah, Roll with the Punches.
I like the title. I think you should go for it.
Great, thank you.
Well, let's talk about your father. Did you know your father well, or were you always a little kid before he passed away?
Yeah, unfortunately, I had just turned 17 when he passed away.
Well, that's old enough. That's old enough.
Yeah, but I don't feel I really got to know him as an adult, you know, as an equal. So, but he did have me work with him on a lot of his projects, so we had a unique relationship.
Well, let's talk. He was born in Italy, I think in Calabria.
Mm-hmm.
He immigrated to the United States when?
When he was 6 years old.
Wow.
His father had come a few years before, so that was in 1926, and his father saved enough money to send for my grandmother, his mother, and his firstborn child. So my dad was the only one born in Italy. So at the age of six, he came over.
And he moved to the Bronx, which...
Yeah, I think
that was a really pretty tough neighborhood at that point in time.
Yeah, I often think of, you know, they were like peasants in the countryside in southern Italy, and then suddenly they're in this urban jungle. I can't imagine.
Did the whole family stay together?
Our extended family, several of them came over, yes, and then they had several more children born in the Bronx and in New York State.
Now, what did he do as he grew up? He first became a fighter?
He was. He was a boxer.
You got to explain. Do you know how? I mean, that's an odd choice to make. That's a tough choice to make. When did he choose that? Like, what time period are we talking about?
You know, I would say, you know, like I said, unfortunately, I never really got to sit down and have an adult conversation with him about his background. But what I gathered is he didn't really complete junior high. He was forced to work, you know, to support the family.
Sure.
His father was a tailor. And he met Jake LaMotta, the boxer, in the neighborhood, and they got to be buddies, and they got to be kind of criminal buddies together. And it's documented in the book that they wrote that the film Raging Bull was derived from. But, you know, they were knocking off poker games and you know, liquor stores.
Wow.
And stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Not something they were proud of later in life. But my dad ended up...
Serving time,
yeah. He was, as you saw in the film, he's very charismatic, yet a strong personality. He was very intelligent. He's the best read person I think I've ever met.
Wow.
But the local hoodlums, who, you know, might have been La Cosa Nostra, didn't really like him invading their territory, so to speak. So they framed him, from what I understand, and put him in Sing Sing for 5 years because the DA at the time cooperated, and yeah.
Wow.
So that changed his life. Well, before that, you asked about boxing. He and Jake, I think, took up boxing in prison, possibly, because Jake was in and out of reform schools as well. So they boxed each other for over 1,000 rounds early in their lives.
They fought each other or other people?
Yeah, other people, but
okay.
Also as
a thousand rounds?
Yeah. they'd work out together, you know. And there's even a joke my dad would tell that he was pretty lucky in his amateur bouts, but Jake said, all right, hit me in the face. There's actually a scene in Raging Bull that comes from this. I want to see how hard you punch. Come on, hit me in the face. And so my dad did, and Jake said, you must poison your opponents before you get in the ring with them.
Whoa.
So, you know, Jake had quite the boxer's ego there.
Now, there's a website dedicated to your father. And
yes,
they talk about he was a natural storyteller.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
So how did he start? I mean, this leap seems absolutely incredible. So he's a boxer. He knows Jake LaMotta. Screenwriting career. It's like there seems like there should have been a couple of other steps there. But it started when he heard a performance of Tchaikovsky's Pathetique.
Yes, apparently. Well, I think if you take a step further back than that, he started reading in prison. I think he helped handle the library there. And he started reading law books and started realizing that he shouldn't have been in prison. All of his appeals were failing. And so he started taking his own case, you know, taking control of his own case and reading the law books. And I think he really started educating himself there and growing an appreciation.
I'm surprised he didn't become a lawyer.
He wanted me to become a lawyer.
So, right, he didn't want to defend himself. He wanted somebody to defend him. It was at least within the family. That makes sense.
Yeah, and that, I think, led to his reading more. And, you know, when you're in prison, you've got plenty of time.
That's right. You got nothing else to do.
5 years as a young man.
But what's the story about a performance of Tchaikovsky's work there?
You know, unfortunately, I don't remember that. I do have the screenplay, though, that he wrote.
And it inspired him to write a screenplay. Was he always fascinated by movies?
You know, I couldn't say so that he is. I don't think he had much exposure to them as a young man, given what I've just told you about his early life.
Yeah.
But his bread and butter work was the dress factories. So, you know, through that, he might have met some people in the industry while going to the city and pricing dresses.
He seems pretty self-directed. Like, all of a sudden, he becomes this screenwriter. He wrote 15 screenplays.
Yes.
And he wrote, directed, and produced and acted in 10 films.
Right, yeah. And
as his daughter, does that not seem like an amazing accomplishment for somebody who's grew up in the Bronx and is in jail and then fighting Jake LaMotta? Suddenly he's writing screenplays?
Of course, absolutely. This is why I feel his life story should be known. And he always... He always said, if I could do it, you know, this bum from the streets, if I could achieve what I achieved in my life, anybody can. You have to believe in yourself, believe in your dreams. It sounds trite, but he was the living embodiment of that. And
he really was.
Yeah.
Now, here's the story. He started writing Raging Bull in 1963. That's a big gap in time between when he started writing it and when it was when it was directed by Scorsese.
Yes.
So can you fill me in on that?
Sure, yeah. In 63, it was probably one of the first screenplays he wrote, and it was kind of autobiographical, considering he and Jake were, you know, knock-around buddies. And he refined it over the years. I think then he and Jake found this attorney who suggested to him, look, and I think this is good advice for any writer, actually, you've written a screenplay, but you're never going to get a publisher, for instance, a book publisher, interested in a screenplay. Whereas if you have a book and you get that published, you could get filmmakers interested in the book. Uh-huh. So why don't you guys expand this into an actual, you know, biography, autobiography? And so they did. So they created with Joseph Carter, who was another writer who helped them get published. He had a name in publishing at the time. They wrote the book together. And then my dad adapted another screenplay from the book. And it was at that point in the 70s, because the book was published in 70 or so, that he got the book to Robert De Niro. And I think that might have been through Danny Aiello,
okay,
who's a mutual friend.
Yep.
And De Niro read the book, and you know, it's been well documented that he convinced Scorsese, who was very ill at the time, that he wanted this to be their next project.
Did he know Scorsese?
No. My father?
Yeah. Trust me, it doesn't sound that odd when you start looking at the arc of your father's life. Like he could have been a neighborhood person. He did, but so you're not clear about how Scorsese got wind of this. He just convinced Scorsese to make Raging Bull.
De Niro did. I think De Niro did.
Oh, De Niro did. That makes sense. So your father knew De Niro, but didn't know Scorsese.
He knew people who knew De Niro. And I think that both De Niro and Scorsese saw themselves in Jake's character in different ways.
His quote is, "If I could do it, anybody can."
Yeah. He really believed that. If you can conceive it and believe it, you can achieve it. And he practiced that. Positive visualization. For a guy who you would think was not very educated, given that background, he really turned himself around.
It's amazing because he made appearances in, I think, three Scorsese films. He was in Raging Bull.
Mm-hmm, right.
He was in New York, New York.
Yes.
And he was in Taxi Driver.
Yes.
As the John.
Yeah. That's a funny part.
Yeah. Now, how old? You're not even born yet, are you?
Taxi Driver era?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was born about when Cauliflower Cupids was being shot.
So, did you have a sense that your father was like a movie star and stuff like that?
Well, even if he hadn't been in the film industry, he would feel that way just because of his personality and his good looks, you know. But but it wasn't like it was like his work, you know. It wasn't like
so you didn't think you had an unusual life growing up. I mean, look, you've got a father who's already got an amazing background life history that's pretty not like probably the rest of the kids that are in your school.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, did you go see Raging Bull and see him in it? Or?
Yes, we went to the premiere.
Wow!
Oh yeah. He co-produced it. He helped train De Niro to box with Jake. He was very involved in the whole production. And I remember sitting next to him in the premiere, and he was very upset at the bad language because he was, above all, an Italian alpha male father figure to me, and I was very overprotected and sheltered. Yeah, so he was very sad and upset because he didn't feel he wrote anything with that kind of language, but you know, it fit the story, of course, but he just didn't want me hearing it.
Oh my God. So did you also go see New York, New York and Taxi Driver?
No, I think I was too young at the time to see those.
Okay. That's what an amazing story to be at the Raging Bull premiere. Did you get to meet other people, like stars? Or you don't even remember? You were a kid.
Yeah, well, I remember some of it, for sure. All the stars were there. And they actually did have a 25th anniversary celebration for it because they hadn't had the money to have a full premiere, like, party at
the time that
it opened. So at that time, I was actually in touch with Mr. Scorsese's office because I had found these Super 8 films that I shot of my dad and Jake training De Niro.
Oh, wow.
In the Gramercy Gym. It's gone now, I think, but on 14th Street in Manhattan. And De Niro apparently wanted to, you know, he was working on Jake's stance and his style of boxing and everything, and he wanted to be able to see himself in the ring, not just be in the ring. So, you know, the idea to shoot him while he was training came up, and my dad took me out of, like, junior high school for a while, and I filmed them. And once my dad passed away, I actually found those films.
Oh, my God.
And they were a real mess. Like, I don't know who projected them for Mr. De Niro at the time, but the sprockets were all torn. So I actually tried putting splice tape on them, but then that covered the soundtrack, you know, the magnetic strip on the side. So I was beating my head against the wall, and I didn't trust just anyone
to try to restore these films.
Yeah. And then around that time, it came out that Mr. Scorsese had the Film Foundation, where he is obviously a huge proponent of film preservation. So I thought, oh my goodness, he should have these films. These are basically his. I wonder if he even knows they exist. So I contacted certain people, and he was excited to get them, and he did restore them. He sent me a 16-millimeter dub of them, or a copy of them, some 8mm. I got some VHS tapes of them, eventually
fantastic.
A DVD. Yeah, and it's really a fun, you know. I've always wished that he would put those out into the public because
I know I would love to see those films.
Yeah, I would love to show them to people, but I wouldn't do that without their permission. Obviously, it's But it's a lot of fun, like my dad, you know, pretending that Mr. De Niro knocked him out and, you know, cute stuff going on like that.
Was Jake LaMotta there for the premiere of Raging Bull?
I believe so. I think so.
Because I'd love to know what he thought about the
film. Actual film.
Was your father happy with the film? I mean, yes, he didn't like the bad language because you were there. But overall, did you get a sense that your father liked the film and was proud of the fact that he was involved in it?
Oh, certainly. I know he was so proud, of course. That was the crowning
achievement.
That's a
big deal. I mean, it's a huge deal.
Of his life. Yeah. I think, of course, when you film a book, and, you know, they used all of the underlying literary materials, but a book by nature has to be edited down to be filmed.
Of course.
He kind of regretted that it was a great stylistic choice, obviously, that Scorsese made. He didn't give you in the film any of Jake's psychological background. And that was what my dad was so interested in writing the book, that Jake, you know, I won't give it away, but early in their lives, as a teenager maybe, Jake robbed a neighborhood bookie and used a lead pipe on him and thought he killed him because it was in the paper the next day that the guy was found dead. And actually, Jake bungled the robbery, and so it was in the article that it wasn't a robbery because he still had his money. So, you know, fast forward through his life where he, you know, is always broke and he goes into the ring to get beat up and he's impotent with his wives. And my father put all this together that he was punishing himself his whole life for what he thought was a murder he had committed. And then at the end of the book, you know, you find out what really happened. But that was sort of the psychological underpinning as to why he was such an angry and, you know, he tortured himself.
That's right.
You know, yeah.
That's really fascinating because I didn't know that background story. Scorsese's interested in visual imagery and the pacing of a film, and he's got a whole different artistic agenda than a novel, I mean, than an account does. But that would have been nice to know that.
But you know what? It was a choice he made. And I remember reading an interview where he said something like, you know, the minute you completely explain your characters, the audience stops thinking about them, stops wondering about them.
Right.
So I think it was, you know, brilliant, obviously.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Paula Petrella. She's a writer. She's currently a grad student at Cornell. And we're talking about the life of her father. It was a very unique person. He was a boxer, an independent filmmaker named Peter Savage. Now, I got to talk to you about the name.
Okay.
When did that happen? I mean, you didn't call him Peter Savage at home, did you?
No. He used a lot of names for different things. I can explain.
Okay, explain it.
When he was a young man, he changed his last name to Petrello because in Italian, O is masculine, A is feminine. So he wanted to sound more, you know, tougher, of course.
Okay.
And he also, his mother used to call him Il Salvaggio as a boxer, the savage.
Oh, okay.
So he decided to use that, and he never said this, but I kind of assumed it was because he did know a lot of the underworld as a young man, and he was writing about them, so I kind of felt like he just didn't want to expose his own name.
But you didn't call him that at home?
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
At
all right. What was his real name?
Francesco Salvatore Petrella.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes. So Frank Petrella.
Now we got to talk about cauliflower cubes. And the amazing thing is, I got a chance to see this movie. Thanks to you, Paula. And all I can say is it was a lot weirder than I thought it was going to be. Which is for me is a positive value. So it's like we should mention the film is not available right now, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Will it ever be? Is there any interest in restoring it and re-releasing it?
Yes. I have wanted for a long time to get all of my dad's films back out.
Absolutely.
Into the public. They are quirky, as you can see, some are. And I did ask for assistance. I tried to get Mr. Scorsese interested in restoring them. I tried raising money. The problem being that I mentioned my dad's bread and butter work was dress factories. After he died, his main factory went up in flames. We don't know what happened. We think it was arson, but I think all of the negatives to his films were stored.
Oh,
there.
No.
Yes, so they are gone.
But I watched this print that was perfectly watchable online.
Yes, luckily that I did have several prints of cauliflower cupids, but they're all projection prints, as far as I know. So they've all been through projectors and scratched up and stretched and.
But that means they can still be restored.
They could be, yes. So I wanted, I guess, you know, Cauliflower Cupids could use just a little bit of audio and video tweaking.
Yep.
His other, some of his other films are in much worse shape. And so it was those that I really wanted help with, but I've never been able to raise the funds. And it would be probably $50,000 to do what needs to be done on these other films.
Well, let's talk about Cauliflower Cupids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
1970. Your father plays Johnny Stiletto. A crime godfather. Okay. Now, I was unprepared for the fact that your father really had a lot of screen presence. I mean, he was pretty incredible. In that movie, every single scene that he appears in, he always appears to be the person who actually can act.
Wow.
And I meant that in the best way. I mean, he had a tremendous sense of charisma on screen.
Yes.
I don't know. That must have been amazing to live with a guy like that.
It was. He was an entire event every day.
Now, this is ostensibly a story about him deciding to go straight for his daughter. He wrote this, right?
Yeah.
And directed it?
Yep.
And stars in it?
Yes.
So it's about this guy going straight for his daughter. Why do I think that that has to do with you?
Well, he also named her Paulette in the film.
So what do you think?
I think it has a kernel of truth to it. But, you know, by the time he was that age, he must have been about 50 when he made that film.
Yeah.
He had been, you know, he had two kids and had the dress factories and was doing the filmmaking on the side, so to speak. You know, he was a family man, businessman by then.
He has the same kind of presence that Chaz Palminteri has.
Yeah.
And I love his voice. I mean, it's amazing. And the funny thing is, Jane Russell's in this movie, and she can't hold the candle to your father. Because she, you know, she's at the tail end of her career. But they have essentially sex scenes together, which is a wild thing to have your father have sex scenes with Jane Russell, including kissing her feet at the end.
Right. I know. Yeah. Well, he had chutzpah. You can say that.
You got to tell me what your honest reaction to seeing this movie is. Because first of all, the movie stars, it seems like it stars every one of his boxing buddies.
Yes.
Okay, Jake LaMotta's in there, but also a whole bunch of other people, which is just amazing. Rocky Graziano?
Yeah. Tony Dale?
Yeah. So all these boxers are in the movie, and they're sort of there for comic effect, essentially, and they're hilarious in this. They're just like sort of wild, and it's also, believe it or not, a psychedelic movie. It's a classic late 60s movie with like go-go dancing and stuff like that in it.
Yes. Well, and to continue on your other question, I am currently offering it on Vimeo. So it is going to be available to the public.
Yeah, you got it.
Starting now.
This is what I think this should be restored, just for the fact that it's a cinematic, real, unique film. I mean, where are you going to see all these boxing people together?
Actually acting,
which is really amazing. There's these fight scenes which are really goofy, and he plays. I love his name, Johnny Stiletto, in this.
Yeah. Reminds me of Johnny Stompanato.
It does. And I wonder if he was doing that.
Maybe. So, yeah, it's a romp. It is. I don't know if you could call it a romantic comedy or it's gangsters. Well,
it's the weirdest thing. I think it's a gangster psychedelic movie. Because it has all this psychedelic in it. Was your father, like, into psychedelic?
No, I
couldn't imagine looking at him that he'd be a guy that would be like doing this.
But it is kind of his personality. He was very serious, and he was also very silly. You know, I mean, there's actually a line that Tony Zale, his character in the film, is always doing crossword puzzles.
Yeah,
and it's kind of an inside joke that you cannot understand what he's saying.
That's right.
A little punch drunk. But at one point, he turns to the other boxers and says, what's a six-letter word for love? And one of them goes, father. Which,
wow.
I never caught that until the last time I watched it. I thought that was
I didn't catch that at all, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't understand him.
I know. but that's kind of emblematic of my dad.
Now, did this get a general release?
Well, as far as I can tell, I've been digging through my father's business records for many years. There's so much of it. But I think that he actually acted as his own distributor. He was mailing it to theaters in the Midwest, maybe like two or three of them.
Okay.
And maybe in the Bronx.
Yeah, it's definitely a B movie in the sense that
yeah.
It would be in a double bill, it would be the first thing that we'd see. It'd be something you'd see in a drive-in movie. But it's got all these moments in it that are really fascinating to me. And like I said, it's also Jane Russell's last movie, and she's got all these hot scenes with your father.
Yeah, she looked beautiful.
So, was he married at the time?
Yes. Yes, to my mother.
How did she feel about that, do you know?
I don't think she felt very good about it,
okay,
to tell you the truth.
Okay, say no more.
Yeah.
Now, we're almost out of time, and I want to mention that another important film, which I didn't get a chance to see, Vigilante, came out in 1982.
Right.
Have you seen that film?
I did, yes. I think
it's a serious film. It's not like Cauliflower Cupids at all.
Yeah. Vigilante, though, I think he guest starred in it or something.
Oh, I'm thinking about The Runaways. Excuse me, The Runaways.
Oh, The Runaways. I'm sorry.
Right. The world. That was my mistake, which is a World War II story dealing with PTSD. And it was shot in Italy.
Yes. Yes, that was the one I was speaking of as one of his other films that I would like to have restored, because that one does not have a good soundtrack, so it needs some audio work, but I'm working on that. But yes, that hopefully will be out on Vimeo also very soon.
That looks like a really interesting film, too.
It is. It's the other end of the spectrum from Cauliflower Cupid.
Paula, we're completely out of time. Give out the website.
Well, there's petersavagefilms.com, which is where you can learn about my dad and his work. And the film, Cauliflower Cupid, will be on vimeo.com. You can just search for it, and it will come up.
This is incredible. My guest tonight has been Paula Petrella, writer and grad student currently at Cornell, and good luck with that. And
thank you.
We were talking about her very unique father, Peter Savage. Paula, it's been a real pleasure.
Same here, Mark. Thank you so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.